Morning, Ottawa. This is the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
As it was. 6:06, good Thursday morning. How are you this morning? Tick, tick, tick. Most mandates in Ontario will be gone this weekend. Isn't that exciting? No, not to me, because I don't even know if I have a mask in my current pants. The pants I'm wearing right now, I don't think I have a mask in them. That's unusual for me. For the past 2 years, I've had masks everywhere.
Yeah, the pocket mask has to go.
Yeah, and I wonder, like, how many days can you keep that in your pocket and it's still sanitary to put it on? But you get caught in a pinch, right? You walk in, oh, I forgot my mask. I think I have one here. It's all crumpled up, and you're like folding out the creases, blowing the dust off. There you go. Got my mask on. Very sanitary. That'll keep the world safe. But the mask mandates, we talked about this yesterday, but the rest of the world is catching up with us. The mask mandates in Ontario are coming to an end. And the Toronto Star did a survey. About 43% of the people last time I checked say they still wear a mask all the time when they're out in public. That does not seem in line with the reality of my world. You think it's a bunch of Toronto Star readers just want to look good? They're just virtue signaling. Oh, yes. I'm very woke and I always wear my mask. Damn that, Doug Ford. And they say, yes, I wear it all the time. There's no way almost half the people who live in this province right now are wearing masks all the time. I just don't buy it.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
I do see some people wearing masks, but it's become almost a rare sight. The last place you really think about now is about mandates is now if you're traveling anywhere, either by train or plane. We couldn't believe it when my wife had to travel recently. She's getting on the VIA train.
Yeah.
And you get to the train station, everybody's wearing a mask. I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot.
Yeah, I did a VIA and I had to show my vaccine passport. That was the first time I'd had to take that out in a long time, too.
And the passport's still mandated, yeah. Yes. But the problem at Pearson Airport is getting more and more attention. It's got to be fixed. We're thinking about traveling to London for a couple of days in September. The one thing that's stopping me right now, it's not that there could be another variant. If there is and things close down, we'll just have to deal with it. That's not the issue. The issue is, do we have to go through Pearson?
Yeah.
Because I hear you could be there for 24 hours. And that's not, people are. I don't think that's the average.
No, but it's not uncommon. It's not
But it's not
rare.
Uncommon. And do I really want to, like, it's about a 6-hour flight, 7-hour flight to get to London from Pearson. Do I want to spend another 7 hours in that airport? I really don't.
Yeah.
But this is a trip I feel like I really want to make.
But you have three months, though. You said September?
I know, but right after I had a conversation with a friend about meeting up with him in London. And right afterwards, it was almost miraculous. I opened up my iPad, went to one of my favorite news sites. The first story I read was, Pearson delays could last till the end of August.
Oh.
Like, ooh, that's close. We're looking at flying out like the last day of August or the first day of September. That's a bit tight. So it's freaking me out. And why? Why? Our prime minister travels all over the world all the time. Why are we being, it just doesn't make any sense. Are you really afraid someone is going to go to, well, take me for example. You think I'm going to go to London and bring back COVID? It's here. It's irrelevant. Again, I understand if in September, London has a new variant called, Xerox. It's a near copy of the original, but it looks a little different. The Z version is out there. And our vaccines don't stop it. And it's 5 times deadlier. And we recommend you don't travel to London. But if you do, wear masks. You have to have a new vaccine. What? Okay, fine. I'll deal with that then. But we're really closing down travel. And that's what we've virtually done. We've made it really impossible to travel easily. We've shut down international travel or kept it shut down. For what? To keep out versions of the virus we already have here. It doesn't make any sense. And anyway, with all the measures we're having right now, some of it will still sneak through. You either have no travel at all or just let it go. I don't. And the prime minister, he took a private jet to go to Los Angeles for this meeting. And I've never been the guy that complains about our prime minister flying in a private jet. I find that absurd when people do that. I don't like this particular leader of our country, but he's the prime minister. And whoever the prime minister is, I don't want him in coach, the back seat by the toilet. You know, the one where the seat doesn't recline and the smell of the toilet keeps wafting in and out every time someone opens the door. I don't think he should be there. Just because, sure, security reasons, all that. But also, it doesn't look good.
No.
Like, could we look like a first world country? In the United States, the guy has his own jet. Like, it's fully equipped. It's got an office on board. It's got a movie theater. It's got, probably has a strip club. I don't know. Like, this thing is fully loaded. And we complain about our prime minister taking a private jet. But I would, for once, have liked him to put his money where his mouth is and say, you know what? These problems at Pearson, they're not that bad and they're necessary. I'll fly through Pearson to get to. I will take business class, Air Canada, Toronto, Los Angeles, and go through Pearson. Because I am not going to fly high and mighty while the rest of you have to go through this. Because that's leadership. That's leadership. I'll be there with you in the trenches. No, he's flying above. Oh, yes. Don't worry about the problems at Pearson. It's necessary. It is private jet. It's the only time I've ever been bothered. Write it down. I want to do that on TV after all. I'm getting wired up about it now. I mean, it's just a, don't worry. If we want to talk about masks on TV, I'll segue it really quickly. Like I just did here. I didn't think I was going to get into the rant. I read Brian Lilly's column. It's more like, yeah, he took a private jet. So what? And then, but then it started to sink in. How about for once, join the rest of us in this fight, Justin? Get in the trenches with us. Just this one time. Because you know if he'd flown through Pearson this week, that problem's fixed 5 days later. It's done. But no, he took his private jet. I can't afford a private jet to London. So, do I really want to go? Yes. Am I going to go? I'll probably book the flight and hope it's done by then. But I'm just not. I'm a little nervous about it. I don't like traveling anyway just because of the delays, the sitting around in airports and the long lines. Cannot stand it. But I like to be places, right? I don't like to go places, but I like to be places. And this seems like we should be able to travel now. We're going everywhere else. We're going to movies. We're going to concerts, right? But you got to go through all this nonsense now to fly in and out of Canada. Pandemic is not over. I'm not saying that. I'm saying we're learning to live with it every other place. Let's do the same thing for travel we're doing for everything else. I don't know why he's hanging on to these old rules just to make Pierre Poilievre mad. I think that's what it is. I think the remaining mandates are designed for one purpose and one purpose only, make Pierre Poilievre mad so that he looks like a crazy person who's against mandates. I think that's why they made the truckers mad. I do. I think the truckers were wrong in their version of science, and I think their protest was fine for a day or two, went on way too long. You know, I think all of those things. But at the same time, they weren't wrong on the issue of mandates at that moment in time. Problem is they arrived and said, we never should have worn masks and we never should wear masks. No, the vaccine mandates were useful at letting us all get out of our home prisons. But you're right, you're traveling alone in a truck and the vaccines no longer prevent you from getting and spreading the disease. Might be time to rethink it. But no, he wanted a battle because he wanted a battle. And I think that's what's going on with travel right now, too. Very frustrating. But I'm in my private jet. I'm above it all. Literally above it all. The Morning Rush, Bill Carroll. I tried to put up a fight.
listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Even if you listen to the head of the World Health Organization, the mandates that people traveling in and out of Canada have to face make even less sense. He's saying the number of new COVID cases and deaths is falling everywhere in the world, except the Middle East and Southeast Asia. But you can't target those, right? You can't say, well, we'll still require masks and vaccine mandates if you're flying to or from those parts of the world, because that would stigmatize people. And we don't want to do that. Not stigmatizing. It's the reality of where the virus is or is not. Anyway, he says the latest report shows a 12% drop in cases and this is really significant, 22% drop in deaths.
Globally, the number of reported COVID cases and deaths continues to decline. This is clearly a very encouraging trend. Increasing vaccination rates are saving lives, but WHO continues to urge caution.
Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, head of the WHO, he says the decline is encouraging, but he warns that new and more dangerous variants could emerge at any time.
The perception that the pandemic is over is understandable, but misguided.
Yeah, but I think I don't think people are as stupid as he thinks they are. I think we all know that it's still lurking out there and another variant could come along and force us to take more drastic action. But until and unless that happens, could we live our lives? We have our vaccines. Many of us have already had COVID. We feel like the risk is relatively lower than it used to be and one that we're just going to have to live with. I think that's a reasonable position. Let's live like that. Because in most people's minds, this pandemic is, at the moment, it's over. Yes, of course there could be a new variant. There could be another monkeypox pops up. That's always a risk. But right now, we have vaccines that are very effective against whatever is out there. And so many people have had it. It's been around for so long. People are just going to do what they're going to do. Let them do it. Stop with this. Warning as we know, we get it, get back to us if it happens. It's like the sky is falling, a new variant of the sky is falling, a new variant of the sky might fall. That's life. There's always something out there that could kill you. We've just learned to accept it. Yeah, but this is still much more likely to kill you than the flu. I know, but I'm leaving my basement. If you're okay with that or not, I'm leaving my basement. Anyway, he really wanted to hammer that home. This perception that it's over is misguided. Clip 3 here.
A new and even more dangerous variant could emerge at any time, and vast numbers of people remain unprotected.
But not in this country. Vast numbers of people in this country are protected. And it's always interesting to me how that gets framed. Right? In Canada, you better get your fourth shot because you're not fully protected. But then they'll say, you know, in South Africa, Omicron didn't spread as widely because, you know, while a small number of people have been vaccinated, many have already had the disease. So that provided protection. So in this country where people have three shots and many, many have already had the disease, yes, but that's not enough. Well, you said it's what mitigated the damage in South Africa. Why won't it mitigate it here? Like, could we apply science equally to two different countries? If one shot has saved a lot of lives in Africa, surely three shots will save a lot of lives in Canada. Or why am I lining up to get mine? I believe they do. I would probably have gotten a lot more sick than I did when I got COVID. I bet that's true of most of you as well. Maybe I wouldn't have. I mean, it's kind of unknowable exactly what would have happened if. But we cannot live with this. There's a possible monster just around the corner. We get it. It's your job to prepare for it. It's your job to, well, look at Moderna. Right now they're working on and testing a new version of the vaccine, which we'll talk about with Dr. Barry Dworkin coming up here in a few minutes. Yeah, all of that stuff has to go on, and we're mentally prepared for it. Here's the problem, though. If we never get to take a breath, we're eventually going to just stop listening to entirely, if that hasn't already happened. And this chaos at our airports and our borders designed just to continue a political battle because our prime minister feels like he's winning it. Eventually he will lose. Eventually he will. Eventually people will turn on him. And those anti-maskers and anti-mandate people, those numbers will grow and grow and grow and grow because he is manipulating science now for political gain. And it's enough. I want to go. I want to travel. I want to have a summer, don't you? And sure, in the proper circumstances, I'll be a little careful. And get back to me when there is a variant. Do you hear his tone there? Could be another variant, just waiting. We know. We get it. Could also get hit by a bus next week when I go out for a walk. Still going to take the occasional walk if you're okay with that. The Morning Rush, Bill Carroll.
Drake Batherson is off the schneid here. This is his first goal of the season, and what a rocket this was.
At the Rink with Gord Wilson.
All right, Gord, the Lightning are hanging in there. One of my predictions is not dead yet.
No, it's not. No, and I'm not sure if that's the correct way to put it, because I think right now, after two straight losses, the New York Rangers might be hanging in there. Fortunately for them, in this series that's tied at two, and it's now at a best of three, they have two of the possible three going on home ice where they're 8-1. But I can tell you, Bill, they didn't look great in their 4-1 loss to Tampa Bay and their 3-2 loss to Tampa Bay in the two games that got this series even at a deuce.
It's been an interesting thing about the Lightning when I've watched them this season. And maybe it's when you've won a couple of Stanley Cups in a row.
Yeah.
They take sometimes a little bit of time to get going. Within a game, I've seen them come from behind a few times.
Yep.
Quite a few times. And within a series as well, they sometimes start a little slow. And then it's like someone goes, okay, it's time to get serious. And that, the last game, had that vibe to it, didn't it? Like,
yeah,
okay,
yeah,
it's time to stop playing around. We've had our break. Now we're going to play for real. And then it just seems inevitable that they'll win.
Yeah, perfect way to put it, because I think the last four periods are evidence of what you just spoke of. It's pretty clear that Stanley Cup pedigree plays a role and has a factor in deciding games, and the New York Rangers are all new to this. The Tampa Bay Lightning aren't, and down 0-2, they obviously felt that they weren't playing their best hockey. I thought Steven Stamkos summed things up perfectly after the 4-1 win the other night by saying, we built off the momentum from our third period the game before. And that third period was three straight goals to erase a 2-0 deficit and get back into the series. And the Rangers just looked like a little bit different team. I'm not taking anything away from Tampa, because they looked like a two-time Stanley Cup champion. But the Rangers seemed a little bit in awe. And I think when they were down 2-0, it looked as though they realized that they blew their opportunity. When they were up 2-0 in Game 3, they blew the opportunity to really put a stranglehold on the defending Cup champions. And I won't say they looked defeated, but they looked nervous. And they stopped playing the way they were playing to get that 2-0 series lead. Tonight is going to be a different story. Madison Square Garden, as I said, they're 8-1 on home ice so far in the playoffs. Tampa can win on the road. There's no question about that. I don't know if they need to win tonight to win the series, but certainly the Rangers, I think, do to win the series.
A couple of times in my career, I've been flown to New York to see a movie and interview the star of the movie.
Yep.
Hang in with me. This will connect.
Okay.
And there's nothing like seeing a movie in a theater in New York. New Yorkers,
yeah,
it's an interactive experience for them. All the way through, they're yelling at the screen, duck down, you idiot! Duck down! He's right behind you! And they're all, yeah! It's really... So
yeah.
I think, I got to see a hockey game one day at Madison Square Garden. It must be amazing. Because New Yorkers are such a colorful people. You've been to many games there. What's the atmosphere like?
The atmosphere is second to none. And you know what? I had the good fortune during renovations, and they put $1 billion into the building. So it's state of the art now. And we're up in a gondola hanging over the ice right now. But there was a time when Dean and I would sit in the stands. Okay, we had fans. Oh, I'm not kidding. Well, Dean called me the other day. We sat beside Liam Neeson. I watched a movie last night called Blacklight. Not sure why it was called Blacklight, but Liam Neeson and Aidan Quinn were the stars in the movie. And Dean called me the other night because he was stumped at who was sitting beside Liam Neeson, who was sitting beside us. They had their kids with, it was Aidan Quinn. So they're longtime friends. And we actually gave one of the kids our media guide. We used to get media guides, gave either Liam's son or Aidan's son one of the Senator media guides so they could follow along. But it was second to none to be able to sit in the stands and absorb the media. I'm a guy who likes to stand up during broadcasts, and this didn't happen in New York. It happened in Washington. I stood up once in the stands to call the game, and I had people yelling at me like there's no tomorrow.
I bet.
And calling me awful names. And I thought they were just calling each other names until I looked around, and they were pointing at me, and I went, oh, my God, I've been standing for the entire period here. New York is very similar, obviously. It's they're just vicious. They're mean. They're creative. It's all in good fun. I had a buddy who went to a Stanley Cup game who's best friends with Jeff Brown, who was playing for the Vancouver Canucks. And they went to a Stanley Cup final game in New York. And during warm-up, Jeff Brown flipped them a puck. They had seats where they could get close to the ice. And he flipped him a puck. And this is a big police officer, Ottawa police officer, who caught the puck. And the fans were on him in a heartbeat. Throw it back. Throw it back. And I think he ended up throwing the puck back onto the ice. He was nervous enough to think, what's going to happen here? It's a different atmosphere for sure.
Well, next time you're there, go see a movie, too.
And go see a movie as well. Yeah, I have not done that. I've not done that in New York. So,
worth
absolutely.
Doing. Sportsnet article I read in preparation. Believe it or not, I prepare for this segment. I know you don't believe that at all. But
well, that makes one of us. Go ahead.
The Senators, it appears they may be pretty busy with the upcoming NHL draft. That some members of the organization say, look, we got a lot of prospects. We got a lot of picks. Might be time to trade some picks to try to get some players we can use right now. So it could be an interesting time for the Senators. Is that your read on it as well?
Yeah, 100%. And it's an encouraging read because players spoke after the exit or during the exit meetings. Players, a lot of them, including the leaders, Brady Tkachuk and Thomas Chabot, both were very vocal about improving this team now. And expressing an interest to the general manager, their interest, that they don't want more draft picks. They want players who can help the team win now. And when you own a seventh overall pick, you've got a pretty good pick, and you're pretty excited about the opportunity to draft a pretty good player. But when Pierre Dorion came out and said, and came out on TSN 1200 to say, well, the pick might be in play, depending on what might be available. That's a deviation from we're going to build from the draft, and certainly in the last 5 years, that has been the strength of the hockey club in terms of getting better, building through the draft, because they have high draft picks. The fact that the GM has said the seventh overall pick may be in play, to me, well, for a player, it's got to be extremely encouraging because a seventh overall pick has the potential to land a very good player, an established player, a player who can fit in to the locker room, a guy who's 25 who may have 400 or 500 games of experience under his belt, who may have been to the playoffs, who may have even won a Stanley Cup. There are going to be players available out there. And this team is certainly in need of experienced players. I don't have any doubt about that. They need a top.
Those are these days when teams get up against the cap, you know, like the Lightning did last year. They had to 100%. Get rid of their entire fourth line, and, you know, everything changed.
Yep.
They had a great fourth line. Still do, apparently. But
they do.
Right? So there's a lot of people out there who wouldn't like to get rid of their talent but have no choice. And so seventh-round pick could give me a really useful inexpensive player for the next few years.
Seventh overall pick, absolutely it could. And you're right, there are dozens of teams. I'm not going to say a dozen. I think there's probably 24 teams that will have difficulty with the cap. And this is the reality of living in a cap world. You know that there's going to be change. And it's a benefit to those who are certainly well within their means to sign players because of the cap and their situation of the cap, and the Senators are one of those. They've got millions of dollars to spend. They're not going to spend to the cap. It's not going to be an $82 million payroll for Ottawa, and I think fans have, you know, come to, I won't say embrace it, but understood that this is a budget team. There are a number of budget-conscious teams in the NHL. There are a bunch who aren't as well and circumvent rules to spend above the cap, namely Vegas. But there's nothing wrong with being a budget team if you do it wisely. And right now, there's been hardship and pain for Ottawa fans watching this team miss the playoffs for five straight years. Well, maybe now it's time to reward the fans with their patience and the pain that they've endured by saying, okay, we're going to spend a little bit more, but we're also going to spend it on players who are potentially going to help. It's going to be a huge, huge summer for this team off the ice.
And I'm glad you corrected my misspeak. I said seventh round. Of course, I meant seventh overall pick. I hear this is a deep draft, but I don't think you're going to get a great player for a seventh round pick, even in this draft. But
yeah,
seventh overall is going to be tempting for a lot of teams. Thank you, Gord.
Thank you, Bill. Have a good weekend.
Always good to catch up with you. Gord Wilson, the Ottawa Senators color commentator from TSN 1200. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll. Morning, Doc.
Morning, Bill.
Changing people's lives all the way in Toronto, Dr. Barry Dworkin. I thought that was, and she said, this is my second favorite segment. She likes our morning meeting in the 5 o'clock hour,
yeah,
and Dr. Dworkin. I'm like, so I'm wasting my time the rest of the morning. No, I just have to step up my game to keep up with you, I guess. That's the deal.
It's nice when you can affect people's lives in a very positive way. And you know, that treatment itself, it does make a huge difference. I mean, everybody talks about weight and diets. I mean, every news item every day, there's always something. There's always some new diet. And then they basically don't work. So now when you have something that really works, despite people saying, oh, well, you know, there are comments that people come out with saying, well, you shouldn't need a drug to help someone lose weight, as if. It's not an issue. So you don't need a drug to treat your thyroid disease or diabetes or heart disease or prevent heart attacks or
cancer. Well, they
or
still don't cancer. See it There's, as a disease, right? They
yeah,
think it's
and
just
it is.
A habit.
Yeah.
But as you explained yesterday, it's not. Well, I think here's a chance to really help people too, because I'm starting to hear this question a lot. And now you know what they say to me? What does Dr. Dworkin think about, which is good because what I think about it is kind of irrelevant compared to what you think about it. But at least I'm informed by you a lot of times when I try to answer. What does Dr. Dworkin think about the fourth shot? Given that I'm hearing there could be an Omicron-specific shot in the fall, should I bother getting a fourth shot now? So Moderna announced yesterday that the studies are showing that the Omicron-specific version is promising.
Yeah.
So where are you on that? Are you telling people to wait now, or is it really very specific as to the patient, how old you are, how many shots have you had already, have you had the virus, have you had the disease itself? I mean, is it too difficult to answer that question in a broad way?
No, not really. You know, for example, I had my fourth dose. I think you had your fourth dose, you know, because we're falling into that age category and risk.
No,
category.
I haven't, because I got Omicron 2 days before I was.
Oh, that's right.
So
you have to wait.
Dose.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
And then they say to wait, what is it, like 3 months after
3 months,
you've recovered?
That's right. Yeah.
So,
the logic is still the same as it was way in the beginning when people said, should I wait for a particular vaccine to come out? Or the point is that even if you get the fourth dose, you will have a boost in your antibodies if you are specifically in a group that's more at risk. So the recommendation would be, yes, to get that if you are in one of those high-risk groups or age groups, because something is better than nothing. And that something still does something, right? It's still increasing your antibody titers. There are going to be, and we talked about this, Bill, a few months ago, there is going to be likely a booster every year, the same time as the flu, that's going to be tailored to what is in the world right now that is causing the most problem. And so there's now the Omicron variant, and there are variants of the Omicron variant that are out. And so this particular vaccine is likely going to come out in September that's more targeted. But that still doesn't mean that you should just not take the extra seatbelt and wait to see what happens in case you end up in a car crash. It's use the available tools now to protect yourself, reduce your risk of hospitalization. So we know that the vaccine itself is extremely safe to use, so that, you know, may feel a little under the weather and have a sore arm afterwards, but ultimately
nothing compared to getting it.
Ooh. Yeah, exactly. So my recommendation based on the evidence that's out there is that if you fall into a category for the fourth dose, you should get it. And then if there's a booster in September, that's more tailored to what's circulating and infection rates tend to go up in September, then you get that one too.
Right. The problem was that the version that they're studying on humans right now is the original Omicron.
Right.
And it has changed as well. So it might be just a step behind again. But it was 1.75 times better than the antibody jump from just getting a fourth dose. So is that a big number, 1.75?
Well, it's almost double. So yeah, and it's also more targeted, right? I mean, the antibodies are matching better the proteins, that, you know, the spike proteins on the virus. So what we need to know, and that number becomes more interesting, if that represents reduction of getting sick, not only reduction of hospitalization, which ultimately it will do, and ending up in the ICU, reducing that risk, but whether what you experienced when you got sick becomes even more tempered and reduced, so it becomes less of an issue for people. That's the key thing as well.
Yeah, and maybe make you a little less contagious, which could blunt another wave in the fall.
Exactly.
Also, though, they said they've done some animal studies, and it does seem to be more effective against the Omicron newer versions as it starts to now change. So I guess that's good news. But the debate is, should that be enough? Like, well, people, it's only been tested on animals. I'm not going to take it, because apparently if we're going to stay on top of this, we cannot wait for long human trials. We have to accept that the vaccine, we know it works. We know it's safe. We just got to test it on animals to see if it works specifically, like we do with the flu. Do you think people will be freaked out and say, no, without 6 months or a year of human testing, I'm not taking this version?
I think initially you might see that, but as with anything, just as we get used to different risks, and I enjoyed your talk earlier in the show about, you know, how risk, you have to, there are risks in life, and that we come to accept them over time. Well, this is going to be more of a commonplace vaccine, be less new, and less new means less perception of it being risky. And I think so over time that will likely happen. But you're right. I mean, this is a known recipe now. It's not anything different. They're just changing how the antibodies are targeted. But ultimately, it's the same vaccine. It's the same technology. So yeah, you're likely not going to need human trials every single year that comes out. I think you may have a few initially just to demonstrate how it's working. But ultimately, it'll be sort of an assumed acceptance that when it comes out every year, just like the flu shot, it's designed to deal with what we're facing at that particular time.
Yeah, and I didn't realize with the flu shot, they do some limited human testing as well, just to make sure it's not, they didn't miss anything obvious, but it's limited because they have to move fast to stay on top of the ever-changing flu.
Correct.
Okay, so the bottom line is, if you're eligible for a fourth dose, get it. And then in the fall, if another one comes along, you can take that one as well, right? No harm?
Yeah, and it's pretty amazing that when you think that you can reduce harm to yourself by taking, you know, 10 minutes to go get a shot at a pharmacy. You know, think about telling somebody that 50 or 100 years ago, that the illnesses that they were suffering from, all the infectious diseases, that all you have to do is stick out your arm and get a shot, and then you're going to live. That would be pretty amazing back then.
Well, that's the problem with our society in many areas. We've had it too good for too long. We don't know how to deal with bad. Thank you, Doc.
You're welcome, Bill.
Dr. Barry Dworkin, medical myth busting, host of Sunday House Call, Sunday afternoons at 3 on News Talk 580 CFRA. City Council went ahead and did its job. We'll talk about that coming up next, The Morning Rush. We'll go all night, just stepping with a woman I love. Oh my-
Good morning, Ottawa. This is the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Did you know that the new head of CNN wants more judicious use of the term breaking news?
I saw that. No more banner unless it's really breaking.
God, I hate that, don't you? Breaking news. I mean, at first I used to stop. I'm channel surfing. Ooh, breaking news. Then you realize their breaking news is some passing comment the guy just made in the interview. They're still doing.
Yeah.
It's not breaking news. So, and they want to be a little more even-handed and then maybe bring in some guests who have the opposite opinion. Because broadcasting used to be at its most interesting when the host would challenge the guest, whatever their opinion. Now it's Sean Hannity brings on like-minded people to reflect Sean Hannity's views. And I just don't think that's ultimately very entertaining, and it's not very educational, but whatever. I mean, sometimes you're going to agree with your guests, sometimes you're not. You shouldn't pretend to disagree with them. Ask devil's advocate questions. But I love that they're getting rid of the breaking news banner. I think that's a good start. I used to work for a boss who had a quota of news bulletins. You can't make this up. I had a quota of news bulletins. I was the news director. If we don't have 10 news bulletins a week, we're not doing our jobs. Really? But what if there aren't 10 bulletin-worthy items? Find them. You know that's absurd, right? And goes against everything we're supposed to be doing here. I hate it when we overuse it in radio, too. I almost want to use it for this story because breaking news, being facetious, breaking news, Ottawa City Council actually did its job.
Hey!
I know that was a long-winded way to get to it, but I got sidetracked. That can happen. Breaking news, Ottawa Council did its job and decided not to put off a decision on Lansdowne Park's redevelopment. They went ahead and they voted. And in fact, they even voted in favor of starting the next phase. I'm still calling for an almost clean sweep at City Hall, guys. You're not going to win me over now. It's too late. But at least it was something. This is a $332.5 million proposal. I love that it's so precise, and you know that that number will not be anything close to the final number. But it's very precise. It makes it sound so well planned. $332.5 million proposal from the Ottawa Sports and Entertainment Group. Then with a 17-7 vote in favor to let's get started on this plan to see the north side stands ripped down, rebuilt. The Civic Center, demolished, rebuilt. When I first heard they were building it under the lawn, I'm like, well, what about windows? I thought, what? Oh, no, there are no windows in arenas.
No.
What am I going on about?
You want to see outside while you're watching the 67s?
Yeah, now I assume you won't just, like, there'll be a hole in the ground with a manhole cover on it. Sorry, a service access cover that you lift off and you go down a ladder. And I assume there'll still be a grand entranceway and a lobby with some glass out onto the square. But other than that, it's true. You don't really have windows in an arena. So, but it was just a weird thought I had in passing. Anyway, so they're going to go ahead and get it started. Mayor Jim Watson said previous councils did not take action at Lansdowne.
The problem with Lansdowne over the last 35 years is that successive councils up until 2010 refused to make any bold decision to improve that valuable asset that the city owns.
Ran into the mayor at Dickinson Days on the weekend. You know what I dislike most about Jim Watson? How hard he is to dislike in person.
I know, nice guy.
He's so nice. He's so nice. And he is, for the most part, he's not an ideologue. I mean, I've disagreed with a lot of things that he's done and said, but that's going to happen, right? But you cannot dislike the guy.
No. Did he have his phone, like, on his belt? His go-to Jim Watson move.
You know, it always looks like he has an old pager on his belt. But I'm glad that he pushed this ahead. I think it was the right thing to do. I mean, he could have done the Sean Menard thing and just said, I'm not going to be the mayor in 6 months, so leave this to the next guy. No, he got it done. Menard didn't like that, though. He didn't like that they went ahead with it.
This is putting the cart before the horse, and this is not how things are done in the city. It's wrong what's going on here, and I think we know it's wrong. Who are you looking out for? Is it people that actually need help in the city, or is it billionaires and developers in the city?
Same old refrain. The billionaires or developers. Those aren't the people who go to the games and go to the restaurants and will live in those apartments they're going to build. We got to double down on Lansdowne. Everybody knows that. Oh, you know, if a developer gets rich along the way, so be it. I'm not bitter. I don't care about that. Let's make it better for people. And he's right. It's not the way things are usually done in this city. That's the good news. We're too good at dragging our feet and being indecisive. 7:17, The Morning Rush. Breaking news.
You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
You guys all, you make me complete.
Aw, that's so nice of you to say.
I'm talking to the listener, I'm not talking to
you. Oh, sorry, I thought we had a moment there.
You tear away little pieces of my soul every day. It's the listeners who make me complete. So our prime minister flew in his private jet right over Pearson. Ha ha, suckers! He did that on his way to the Americas, big summit of the Americas, hosted a discussion among leaders for several Latin American and Caribbean nations. I'm told it's not Caribbean, by the way. There's only one place in the Caribbean where they call it the Caribbean.
Which is?
I forget which
one. Oh, okay. But I always say Caribbean.
Just Caribbean. There's nothing wrong with saying it the old-fashioned way. Anyway, Caribbean nations, during a roundtable at the Summit of the Americas in Los Angeles, here's our prime minister.
As a world, we need democracies to succeed. And in order for democracies to succeed at a time where they're backsliding, where they're under pressure from all sorts of corners of the world, we need our citizens to feel that success.
So clever, our prime minister, isn't he? I mean, just forget the fact that he likes China's basic dictatorship because they get things done, and he and his family have been friends of the Castros for years and love Cuba. Forget about all of that. He's worried about the backsliding. Our foreign affairs minister, Melanie Joly, took part in a panel discussion with the U.S. Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, at the Summit of the Americas as well.
Nobody leaves his or her home because they want to. They leave because there's no opportunities, because they're facing poverty and an untenable situation.
Sure, probably true, but does that mean we should just open up our borders and let them flow in? My theory, call this naive, my theory is that if you open your borders fully to a third world country, and the United States is in a very unique situation that they have Mexico on their border. And now people say, well, it's more like a developing nation. It's still, if you've been to Mexico, like, did you get out of the resort? There's a lot of poverty there. Plus, people can walk through Mexico from Central America, South America, often do. If you leave that border open to third world countries, pretty soon you're a third world country. That's just the reality. I'm not saying don't be humane. Don't bring in immigration. I think it's healthy for a country. Legitimate refugees we should absolutely have. I don't know. It's just such an easy woke argument, isn't it? These people are running from something. Yeah, I get that. But there's a lot of bad in the world. We can't fix all of it. But we don't want to bring it. We don't want to make our country as impoverished as other countries, do we? That's not the answer. She says people typically don't leave on foot, though, and she wanted to emphasize that.
We need to give trust in people that they can be living in their country and having access to services, to good education for their children, to also good healthcare.
Yeah, and that was Justin Trudeau's dad's theory. The way you help the third world so they don't come and take what you have in the first world is you have to help them develop. And we thought free trade would do that. It doesn't seem to have been very effective, right? We gave up our high-paying jobs to Mexico, and they made them low-paying jobs. Didn't really work out, because until you have a real democratic institution, where Mexico's a great example of the country's run more by the drug cartels than it is by the government, who are afraid to deal with them, it doesn't matter how much money or how many jobs you pour into it. In the end, the money's not going to go to the right places. Very sad situation. But before our government worries too much about opening borders around the world or helping third world countries, could we just get Pearson flowing again so the Canadians can travel to and from their country? Because you know what? Canadians will go to those third world countries and spend their money helping their economies. You just have to make it easier for us to get home. I know you didn't notice that problem, Justin, from your private jet. I have nothing against the Prime Minister taking a private jet, but would this not have been the one time to go through Pearson to show that you will suffer with everybody else because it's what's necessary? It's apparently not necessary for him. And you know he's going to be at half of these meetings no mask, but he'll come home, he'll be standing in the middle of a park wearing a mask, virtue signaling with the mask. But then he goes to the UK, takes it off. And yet this goes unnoticed by the masses. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning, I'm Bill Carroll. And if you can't be next to
me, your memory's ecstasy. You're listening to the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Well, it's about a year ago right now. There was a pandemic lockdown still going on. It's more like the end of June when I first took up golf. You know what I've learned about golf in the last year?
What's that?
It's really, really hard.
You're not too good?
And that came as no surprise. I have zero athletic ability. But I've gone from, like, I can't even hit the ball, and I spin myself in a big circle and, like, screw myself into the ground.
Like a cartoon?
Yeah, I've gone from that. Like, I'll tell you, yesterday on the driving range, most of my drives were somewhere after the 150 post, rolling out after. I hit one in the air, very straight, that went almost 200.
Oh.
But someone at the PGA tournament, I think 2 weeks ago, drove 400 yards. You think, oh, it looks like the pros. And then you realize, how is a human being doing that twice as far? Like, it's not even, you could work your whole life to gain 10 yards. And these guys do 400. It's so discouraging. Anyway, golf. It's the focus is on Canada, sort of. It's the Canadian Open. Always been a tough sell. Been to a couple of Canadian Opens in Oakville back in the day when I got to go free. And it's always a tough sell because the U.S. Open is coming up and a lot of guys would skip it. And this year, there's a lot of controversy around who didn't show up. So it's a big story. Adam Stanley, local golf writer, friend of Matt's. Can Matt golf, by the way, Adam? Have you ever golfed with him?
I've never golfed with Matt, no. So I can neither confirm or deny if he's...
No, I can't. I'll just tell you. There's a reason you haven't golfed with me, because I suck.
Are you pretty good, Adam?
I'm halfway decent at golf. I just don't really play anymore. I certainly don't practice. So I can hit the ball off the tee pretty good. My iron game is pretty solid, but around the greens I stink because I don't practice. And that's how the guys who are really good actually score well, is they have all the shots and I don't.
Yeah, my mother-in-law, especially since she broke her shoulder, she was always a great golfer. She's 80, and she can't hit very far now because she can only do half swing. She gets close to the green, though, and then you just go home. Because, you know, she's going to chip that ball up. It's going to land 2 feet from the hole. She's going to putt it in. And I'm going to chip it over the hole, into the other sand trap on the other side. Then I'm going to whack it back over to the other. You know, I'm going to be there for 20 minutes.
It's a disaster. I feel that.
I can see you've watched me. So, who's the star now at the Canadian Open without the big star walking away to join the Saudi tournament?
Actually, there are way more stars at the Canadian Open this week than there are at the Saudi tournament. I think the Saudi tournament has a bit of shiny new syndrome going on. You know, there's so much money being thrown around at these guys. There's the obvious geopolitical implications of the entire series. But when you break it down to the actual guys who are top ranked in the world, the Canadian Open far and away has a much better field. Scottie Scheffler, he's the world number one golfer. He's playing in Canada this week. There's five of the top 10, including Rory McIlroy, who's the defending champion, kind of the new global icon for the game. So when it comes to strength of field, there really is no comparison. The Canadian Open is blowing the other event out of the water.
I could watch videos of Rory McIlroy hitting a ball in slow motion all day long.
It's perfect.
It's just, right? It's a thing of beauty. It really is. So that's the good news. There's lots of good golf to be seen. And I guess they're just barely underway. Here, I saw a tweet, and maybe you can explain it to me. It's a good timing you're on. Justin Thomas is off in Canada, starting on the ninth hole, which is a bit unusual. It's a gettable par five, but JT can't grab a birdie opening par. So I read that and thought, you could start on the ninth hole. Is that a thing?
Only this week. So the way St. George's Golf and Country Club is hosting this week's Canadian Open. It's in Etobicoke. The actual footprint of St. George's is really, really small. It's so small that the guys aren't even using the driving range at St. George's. They're using the driving range at Islington Golf and Country Club, which is about a 5-minute drive down the street. So they're getting police escorts back and forth. Anyways, the easier way of starting their round is on the first tee, which is close to the clubhouse, and then the ninth tee, which is also close to the clubhouse, versus the 10th, which is what they usually do, which is actually kind of far away. So it's a one-off for this week only, just based on logistics.
Okay, so they said it's unusual, but this isn't the only time or place it's ever happened. Yeah, I guess that doesn't change much, does it, if you're a golfer?
Not really. I will say it's kind of funny. Yesterday, one of the shuttle drivers, one of the escorted shuttle drivers from the driving range to the golf course, actually got a speeding ticket coming down as Islington to get the guy back to the golf course. So there are some escorts to get the guys there for their tee times, but during the practice rounds, yeah, there's just like random volunteers driving, you know, Jeeps down Islington, and one guy got a speeding ticket, which I thought was kind of funny.
While you're here, what's going to happen with this new Saudi league or tournament or whatever we're going to call it?
Yeah.
Is it going to hurt the PGA, or is this something you think is a blip?
That's kind of the $100 million question, because the Saudi government obviously has, I mean, not to wade into the politics side of things too much, because that's not really my area, but, you know, they have unlimited funds, it seems like. And this, from a golfing output perspective, is really just an exhibition. However, it's an exhibition that has managed to draw some of the biggest names in the sport from the last, you know, two decades or so to come play it. For now, it's a six event exhibition, no cuts, shotgun starts, which means they don't actually start on number one tee. They start on all the holes. It's a team event. Dustin Johnson is rumored to be getting $150 million guaranteed over 3 years to play in this thing. So it is an exhibition. There's a lot of the shiny new syndrome. Like I said, it's just like, oh, what's this? It's new. It's different. You know, Phil Mickelson has come out of his exile to come and play this first event as well. So there's six United States. The first one obviously starts today, a little bit later in the afternoon. The big question, I'll leave it at this, is what is the PGA Tour going to do with these guys? Technically, as it stands right now, they haven't broken any rules. They haven't actually hit a shot for this rival league. But as soon as they do, and as soon as they go against all of the PGA Tour rules, what will the punishment be? And from what I've heard, it sounds like, you know, full-on bans are on the table, multi-year suspensions are on the table, banning them from playing the major championships is on the table as well. And I believe we'll find out what the answers are to those questions in the next 48 hours.
So are you going to be at St. George's?
Yeah, I'm here in Toronto right now. I've been on site the last couple of days, and I am heading out there as soon as we hang up.
Amazing golf course. I lived very close to it for a while, but I wasn't a golfer at the time. But their main clubhouse is on one side of the road of Islington. The whole course is on the other, and it's kind of weird. But when there's a tunnel connecting the two,
yes,
underneath Islington. But when you go up into the clubhouse, they've got these hedges and you can't even see the road. And it's like some miracle happened. It's like going into Doctor Who's little phone box. You go into the clubhouse and all you're doing is looking over this spectacularly beautiful golf course. You're thinking, well, where did the road go? It's really gorgeous. I hear it's a great course to play. And it would be a lot of fun. I used to know people who had a house that backed onto it. Now, wouldn't that be great?
That works. Yep.
Sit in your backyard and watch the Canadian Open and some of the best golfers in the world. Incredible. Enjoy it, Adam. Maybe we'll check in with you on Monday.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Adam Stanley, local golf writer at the Canadian Open. I'm a little jealous. I'd like to be at that tournament this weekend. That'd be fun to watch. I'm just sad I didn't like golf more when I got to go to a Canadian Open.
Right. Yeah. Morning you were just rush. Kind of there because you had to.
Wasted. Yeah. Like, I didn't even understand what they're doing. What's going on? So he can hit a ball with a stick. Should I be impressed by that? The answer is yes, I should have been. The Morning Rush, Bill Carroll.
Trending. Trending today with Matt Harris.
So a school story today on Trending.
Yeah, I think this is kind of strange. So a woman's name is Patricia Buckley. Her son is 14-year-old Brady. They live near Jackson, Mississippi, in one of the little townships. Bradley got at school a certificate, and it said the Zero Award. It's impossible to be me. Don't try. You'll never find a solution. Which I don't even fully understand what that means.
Could it be interpreted in a positive way?
The family didn't take it that way. But
which would be kind of an insult to all the other kids in the class.
Right. Don't be me. Don't even try. You can't try. Here's what I find weird about this, though. Family goes to the local ABC station out there. They do the little story. But then the New York Post picks it up. Now, all of a sudden, this kid's face is everywhere. And he's like, my teacher made fun of me. That can't be good. Now he goes to school today.
So you're mad that your kid's been embarrassed in front of 20
his peers.
Kids. So now you embarrass him in front of the world.
Right. And at worst case, you thought you were going to embarrass him in front of the town, which is everyone he knows. Watches WPAT ABC News Mississippi.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know if they're attention-seeking or they were just misguided and angry.
Maybe, but just let it cool down. Anyway, here's Bradley. He's 14. So it's not like, anyway, he's 14 on ABC talking about this little certificate he got.
Feeling sad, and I didn't want to really give it to her.
He didn't want to give it to his mom. He had it all rolled up. His mom spoke to the TV station, too.
I think that was so horrible for him to get this kind of award.
Horrible to get the award. She spoke to the superintendent as well.
I don't know. That's why I called to the superintendent's office to see, you know, if she can tell me, to, you know, what do this mean?
That's all I got now. And my takeaway was just feeling sorry for the kid because his mom went to the TV station. Am I reading this wrong?
No, I don't think so. I'm still trying to figure out what the certificate was about.
Yeah, the Zero Award. It's impossible to be me. Don't try.
It does sound like I'm a loser.
Yeah.
And no one else could be this stupid. It does kind of sound like that.
It does. But if that's what you think is the message, embarrassing your kid on the media doesn't seem
to be. If they had that when I was in school, my wall would be filled with those.
Oh, I would have. Yeah, I would have been the leader.
Finally, I'm a winner at being a loser. The Morning Rush.
You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
I've been out and about doing some chores the past couple of days. I make excuses now to go to Kempville just to go to the Kerbalicious truck. Did I tell you about that? It's the guy who was the chef for Stephen Harper. Opened this really, I mean, it's not like, it's really fine dining almost food at this truck. It's right across from the guitar store in Kempville. So I love it. And I got there yesterday too late. He'd closed.
Oh, no.
Over. I was like, oh, it's so good. They got this steak sandwich thing. It was unbelievable. So I went across the street. I was there. I went to Graham's Bakery in Kempville. I'm like, I feel like I live in Kempville now. Can I tell you, I didn't see anyone. And in Manotick, too, I had a couple of chores. I was in the drugstore. And people sometimes approach me. They're strangers because they've seen me on TV or whatever. I didn't have a single conversation in the last 2 days that did not involve inflation. The cost of everything. It's always led by gas, followed by groceries. And I think the two are linked. But this is what every Canadian is talking about. And some businessmen are feeling very dire. Elon Musk said, you know, he has a very, very bad feeling about the economy. A lot of business people are saying, I don't know where this is going, but it's not going anywhere good. So the opposition was pushing the Liberal government again to take more action on the rising cost of living. Is there much they can do? Well, yeah, they could forego their extra taxes on gasoline, which were designed to stop us from driving, because It's no one is driving unnecessarily these days. That's the key, right? Unnecessarily. As for food, I don't know. I saw a really interesting tweet yesterday from our favorite guy, Sylvain Charlebois, the senior director of the Agri-Food Analytics Lab, professor in food distribution and policy at Dalhousie University. And he said this: the claim which suggests the food industry is recession-proof is a myth. Just needed to say that this morning. Sylvain, who was saying that? I've never heard that, food industry recession-proof. Who says that?
Oh, I've heard that several times. For many years, actually, a lot of people think, well, people need to eat. Sales won't be impacted because you need to eat. And so you may actually decide not to travel. You may decide not to buy clothes. You may decide not to do a lot of different things, but you need to eat. And a lot of people actually think that, you know, the food industry is recession-proof. That's not exactly the case, because guess what? When we go through a recession and you earn less money, and right now we're all getting a pay cut.
I mean, For sure. We quoted from a story yesterday that said some Canadians are already skipping meals or leaving out side dishes when they cook at home because they can't afford food.
And let's say that you can't afford, like, calories, any calories. Well, the calories that you're eating now, if you got a pay cut or you lost your job, well, they're not going to be the same calories. You're going to trade down, trade sideways. You're going to buy food at different places. The nutritional value will likely be compromised. And of course, that will impact the bottom line of most food businesses for sure.
Yeah, and that means that they start to lay people off. And
Actually, the worst thing is that you can't afford to eat well, essentially, because you tend to, when your budget is tight, you'll go after easy calories, calories that are not necessarily good for you. And so that's the problem with recessions. And of course, with grocers, the value add where they actually make their money is in perishables. But perishables tend to be more expensive, and it takes more time. And people, when they actually are down, they're not necessarily looking at, you know, putting up like extravagant meals. They don't look at doing all sorts of things they didn't do before. So that's why recessions tend to affect the food industry. But what's worse right now is inflation. Inflation is really pushing companies to renegotiate terms. And a couple of weeks ago, we saw the stop sell between Frito-Lay and Loblaws. And I know, Bill, you're a big fan of chips. That affected you. But there's lots of stop sells just because of inflation. And that's why there's more pressure on manufacturing. And jobs won't necessarily be created as a result.
Yeah, can't afford chips anymore. Cancel TV.
Did you see the price of Lay's of late? Like, seriously?
No.
It's $4.50 a bag.
It is not.
I kid you not. No, it's, and there's more air in it. Shrinkflation.
It's unbelievable. You open those bags, it's like there's five chips at the bottom.
Exactly. Each chip is worth a dollar.
Well, it costs a dollar. I don't know if it's worth a dollar, but I'll be cutting up real potatoes and frying them up myself, putting a little sour cream powder on it.
I mean, shrinkflation is this is the other thing that is hitting consumers really hard, and I'm actually getting a lot of emails and phone calls about shrinkflation the last 3 days. A lot of people are noticing that, you know, instead of six bagels, you get five for the same price. More air in chip bags. Quantities are being reduced, but prices are staying the same. So this is something I was expecting about 18 months ago because of commodity prices. Input costs are going up. If input costs go up, manufacturers will actually just cut on quantities, which, of course, will leave consumers annoyed because you're basically getting less of the same price.
Probably good for my waistline, though, to buy a bag of chips and have a few less.
Absolutely. And good for the planet, Bill. You waste less food. We buy too much food at times. So,
well, we've become acutely aware of how much food waste we have around here, and we've started to cut down on it. And we're not a family that has to watch every penny, but I think about the families who do, and it's got to be tough to watch the price of groceries getting more and more out of reach every day. Is there any sign of a break in that?
I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but when we're looking at our numbers right now, and because obviously because of the conflict in Ukraine, and I don't think that President Vladimir Putin minds the fact that he's hurting a lot of people on Earth, and that it's not just Ukraine. You're going to see millions and millions of people suffer from hunger. There'll be famine in regions like the Middle East, Northeast Africa, parts of Europe. In North America, we're in this food security bubble, but costs are going to go up. The worst is yet to come. I think we're going to reach a peak probably in September, October. That's when it's going to get worse.
Well, and everybody's surprised that Ukraine has managed to hang in and hold back Russia as long as they have. The reality is if that war had lasted 2 or 3 days, it would have been very bad for the people of Ukraine, but better for the rest of the world. That's the irony of all of it, of course. But does the world at least have time? Can we look longer term and think, okay, next summer the world will have adjusted, even if the Ukraine war is still going on. Farmers will have planted more crops. We'll adapt, and prices will start to return to something more like normal?
Well, right now, in Canada, we started our 90-day production cycle. So pressure's on us now, and the United States and parts of Europe. So we have to deliver. Mother Nature has to cooperate. But when you look at the prairie picture right now, Alberta doesn't have enough water. Manitoba has too much water, and Saskatchewan is just right. So it's the scenario is better than last year, but last year was a disaster. So let's hope for the best. The problem, I mean, you got 25 million tons of grains in Ukraine right now, and because of what's going on with the Odessa port, nobody has access to it. The Kremlin actually said, well, maybe we'll give the world access to those grains, but anyways, we'll think about it. That's how.
Yeah, they're going to want something in return.
That's right. And so this is essentially Russia is weaponizing food. That's really what's going on right now.
Well, it's having an impact. We're all wounded by it. That's for sure. Thanks for your time. Oh, yeah. Wish we had better news.
All right. You take care, Bill.
You too. Sylvain Charlebois, Senior Director of the Agri-Food Analytics Lab and Professor in Food Distribution and Policy at Dalhousie University. The Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll.
News Talk 580 CFRA's $1,000 Minute. Brought to you by Alpine Credits. Homeowners get approved.
All right, we have Rob on the line from Ottawa Centre. How are you doing, Rob?
Yeah, good morning. How are you?
Not too bad. Your phone sounds a little muffled. Just say something like, Bill, you're the most fabulous host in radio history.
Bill, you're the most fabulous host in history. Can you hear me?
Radio history would have been more narrow, but I'll take that.
Okay.
All right, okay. I can understand you. It's just your phone is just a little bit muffled. If you win $1,000, get a new phone. It's going to be great.
Okay.
Here we go. Here are the rules.
10 questions a minute, $10 per correct answer. All 10 gives you $1,000. Have to take your first answer. You can say pass. We'll go back if there's time. You got it?
Okay.
Here we go. Question number one. How many new condo towers are planned for Lansdowne?
1,200.
What's the forecasted high today? Which course is hosting the Canadian Open?
St. George.
When will mask mandates be dropped in Ontario?
Saturday.
In which province are parents upset after the kids had their mouths taped shut at school?
Quebec.
Which grocery store chain has announced it's dropping Air Miles?
Sobeys.
Which local hospital says it's keeping the mask mandate?
Chio.
When is the next day without rain in our forecast?
Pass.
Which city councillor said the next term of council should have voted on Lansdowne?
Sean Menard.
Which team will the Red Blacks play in their home opener?
Winnipeg Blue Home.
When's the next day in the forecast without rain?
Saturday.
Wow, Rob, nice job. Fantastic. Can I make a... We got them all in, right?
Yeah, we did. Sorry, my mic wasn't on.
Okay. And he got them in like in 40 seconds or something. That was crazy. Okay, I want to make a ruling early on one. Question number three. He said the question was which course is hosting the Canadian Open. He said St. George. I'm going to rule that he didn't finish the thought before he switched it.
Okay.
So we'll take St. George as his answer. We'll find out if that's the right answer, but that's the one I'm going to take. Okay, here we go.
All right, question number one. How many new condo towers are planned for Lansdowne? You said 1,200. Three.
Could it be 1,200 units?
Yeah, that's what I meant. Maybe?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That was not the question, though. It was how many towers.
Yeah.
And the answer is three. You're not off to a good start, but watch this.
What's the forecasted high today? You said 18. Which course is hosting the Canadian Open? You started and then you changed your mind to St. George. When will the mask mandate be dropped in Ontario? You said on Saturday. In which province are parents upset after the kids had their mouth taped shut at school? You said Quebec. Which grocery store chain has announced is dropping air miles? You said Sobeys. Yes.
See him go now, and my heart's breaking for him more with every correct answer.
We would have also taken Empire Brands, for what it's worth, for that question. Which local hospital says it's keeping the mask mandate? You said Chio. When is the next day without rain in the forecast? You said Saturday. Which city councilor said the next term of council should have voted on Lansdowne? You said Sean Menard. And question number 10, which team will the Red Blacks play in the home opener? You said the Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
Look at that.
Damn.
Rob, you got the first one wrong, and then you just cleaned up after that. You get 90 bucks. That's almost worse than getting 20 or 30, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. I was nervous.
Well, you didn't show it after that first question, that's for sure. I'm impressed. 90 bucks, 9 out of 10. Congratulations. Great job.
Thank you.
It's 8:30. Gord Wilson talks Sens hockey and playoff hockey coming up next. Morning Rush, Bill Carroll.
Now, the Inbox. Everybody's talking about. On News Talk 580 CFRA.
Where is Maddie going? She's great. Am I allowed to tell you, or is that Maddie's secret talk?
Yeah, she can tell us tomorrow, but she got a new job.
Yeah, she's leaving broadcasting. So you won't be able to hear her on the air, but she's moving on. Tomorrow at this time, she'll let you know. Kerbalicious appreciates the mention. Thank you.
Nice.
We made Matt really hungry.
I'm so hungry right now, and then you started talking about it in the commercial break again.
It's gourmet truck food. It's so good. You're going to be, I know you. You're getting in your car, and instead of heading to Orleans, you're going south.
Yeah. It's too far, though. Kempville, Orleans to Kempville is so far.
You could drop by here. We could hang out for a few minutes. Bring Daisy. Oh, then you have to go home and get Daisy.
Yeah, the price of gas.
Yeah. That's true. It's worth it, though. Man. The PM does not fly commercial due to security protocols implemented by the government, Brian. We know that. That was never my point. My point was, wouldn't it have been nice if he made a big show of it and went through Pearson just to say, I'm going to live this pain with you. That was my point. I understand security protocols. I don't even care if it's just I want my prime minister to look like he can afford a private jet, that our government is successful enough, our country is rich enough, that our top politician can afford, our leader can afford a private jet. That doesn't bother me at all. I was simply, never mind. You just, some people you can't explain to. Why am I even trying? It looks to me that maybe our mayor is fighting for a legacy. No idea if that's where the Lansdowne Park improvement push is coming from, but this modus operandi I have observed in the past. When will politicians realize it's not about their legacy, it's about maintaining the city? Our three main east-west corridors the city is responsible for shows their lack of attention. Make no mistake, I like the 67s. Charles from Centertown. Not sure what he dislikes about this planet Lansdowne exactly, but... Hi, Bill. Do you know if there's any second world countries? If yes, how come we don't hear about them?
Fair question.
Lynn and Rockland. No, I do think they don't really use the term. It's more the developing world now. Or the
Yeah, but back in the day, the second world was like the Soviet Union and China.
Right.
And yeah, but we don't really say those ones, right?
No, we don't. But we still, third world is kind of stuck around. Just a great expression. And one final one from Anonymous. You guys are idiots.
Okay.
It's unarguable.
That is true.
The Morning Rush. The Wheel of Hosts. Who's in next?
Oh.
Let's find out. Does our new guy know about this?
I don't know. No one told Bunda about the Wheel of Hosts. So I'll do this.
Ding, 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 ding.
2 days in a row. Andy Pinsent.
All right. Sandy's coming up next. That's it for me. We'll get the new guy fully trained by tomorrow. What are we calling him?
I call him Bunda because that's his last name. Steve, I've never called you Steve. I've known you for years.
Let's just agree on it now. He's Bunda.
He's Bunda.
Yeah, I like Bunda. It's got a powerful ring to it, doesn't it?
It does.
Isn't he our football guy?
Oh, yeah. We're using him for football analysis tomorrow.
Right. He's like the sideline reporter, isn't he, on football?
Yeah, you go to the game, you're at Lansdowne, and the guy you see with the TSN 1200 mic?
Just yell, Bunda! He'll know who you are. Wait till he's on the air and see if you can distract him. Okay, so, but we're going to talk football with him because the season opens tomorrow.
Yes.
That's all coming up. I got to go, though. This has been The Morning Rush. See ya. Have a good one.